Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs on the planet. And I can say from personal experience that they have awesome customer service. Use the code MMOReporter at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD. And by Audible, the best audiobook service in existence. Seriously, if you like stories at all, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOReporter and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. Those ads help cover our server costs for the show, but if you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can go to gamediplomat.com/donate and show us some love. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to episode 58 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined by Matt Lowe.
Hello.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm good, Josh. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Or do you prefer Matticus or Matt?
I prefer Matt.
All right.
Online people call me Matticus, but, you know, Matt just sounds a little bit more like comfortable.
Yeah, like
less
like
formal,
we're best,
you know?
Friends.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like it's more approachable, it's more casual-ish, you know, you're not so formal. Like don't call me Matthew.
Ooh.
That's reserved for like my mom and my boss.
Oh, this
that's like when I'm in trouble, you know.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I don't know if I want my boss calling me my full name.
That's yeah, nice. Exactly. Well, that's like
that's
Joshua.
Not good, dude. Yeah.
What did you do this time? Yeah, exactly. What did you break? No.
Just the servers. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So where did you get the name Matticus, actually? Is it just like a fantasy version of Matt?
So when you were way younger in high school, did you ever do a book called To Kill a Mockingbird?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Atticus
Finch. There you go.
Oh.
That's where it came from.
Nice. I
so
like it.
M in front, yeah.
That's very studious of you. Now you're literary figure.
Exactly. I mean, it's one of those little, I guess, Easter egg things. That's one of those very, very little known facts, but that's kind of where I got the name from.
Very cool. So, yeah. Matt / Matticus /
mm-hmm.
Matthew busted. why don't you tell people what your experience is with Hearthstone, why you're here, all that sort of good stuff.
Okay, well, my name is Matticus. I'm a Hearthaholic. I've reached Legend a couple times. I'm the resident Hearthstone columnist for Blizzard Watch, which is the current iteration of WoW Insider. Some of you may have heard about that if you were avid Warcraft players back in the day, or still are.
Oh, yeah.
But that's kind of that's where I'm at right now. And I have a confession to make.
Okay.
I've been playing Secrets Paladin for a while.
Oh, man.
I was strong for the past 2 years, but I was weak, and I gave in. And I'm here on this podcast because I was told that there were free donuts.
Oh, there are. You just had to bring them.
Oh, well then.
Yeah. I'm kind of disappointed,
to be
honest. My bad. I didn't
realize the guest is supposed to bring donuts.
No, the person playing Secrets Paladin is supposed to bring
Secrets
them.
Paladin guy.
Yeah, as penance for your sins.
That's my bad.
So are you loving it? Or are you just doing it because you have to?
I'm a little from column A, a little from column B.
Okay.
You know, like ever since there was a patron nerf. We'll get to that in a little bit, but it's one of the few decks that I have that I really enjoy playing, and I find that it's a little bit of an easier learning curve.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's literally you drop your mysterious challenger and you either win or they dismantle your secrets entirely and you lose. Yeah, it's
nice
a pretty
and
like,
simple. I like
exactly.
That.
It's like a couple of like two or three strategies in it, right? Or you drop a Dr. Boom or a Tyrion, and then maybe you win, maybe you don't. But it's I'd say it's a fairly one or two dimensional kind of a deck.
So you mentioned you've gotten to Legendary a couple times now. What
mm-hmm.
have been your favorite decks all time that have helped you get there?
Oh man, I don't. Ends in Hunter.
Okay.
Starts with Face.
Oh man.
I know. I'm like I'm pretty sure I'm the arch enemy of everybody listening to the show right now.
You're not endearing
You're
yourself to this crowd
guy.
At all.
Yeah.
Secrets Paladin, Face Hunter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the only respectable deck that I've used that's made high or that's gone really far would have been Fast Druid, Combo Druid, whichever one has the Force of Nature, Savage Roar, all that stuff. And mid-range Hunter, which is like one step removed from Face Hunter because it's a little slower.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just more...
Mid-range is a little more interesting.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, so let me give you one last question.
Yeah.
Did you play Murloc Warlock back in the day?
Yeah.
Oh, Matt, come on. I was trying to give you an out, buddy.
I know. I can't. Do you want to be honest? Or
yeah, I do want you to be honest. I just want you to have made better life choices.
Okay, well, okay. To be fair, I tried it.
Okay.
I didn't stick with it, but I tried.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine.
I had to try it because I want to see, okay, this is how a Murloc player plays. This is its strengths. This is what it's weak against.
Okay, now that's fine. That's research. Yeah, everyone gets a little curious.
There's this whole, like, I don't know about you, but I've seen this huge attitude against players net decking. And net decking is the art of, you know, going on Hearthpwn or Hearthhead or whatever and just download or just looking at their decks and just using it and playing it straight up without doing any creative work on your own. And I feel that that's a little unfair because I think it's kind of necessary if you want to stay ahead and just learn more about your potential opponents. It's the only way to learn and get better. If you play those decks, you find out what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and how to beat them.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's how people beat you. So that's kind of my little spiel against people who despise net decking and all that.
Yeah, I don't get that philosophy at all either, because net decking is totally fine. I mean, even Raynad, recently I was reading an article on PC Gamer, an interview with him, and he came out and was like, you're not really going to be inventing decks, even at the highest level. Like, he is talking about the Hearthstone tournament. You aren't really inventing new decks. You're just playing the best decks.
Exactly.
I mean, and it's all about that skill of knowing how to play it and knowing your opponent. Like you were saying, learning what they're going to do with their deck so that you know how to counter it with yours. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly right, yeah. And, I don't know, there's just been, like, a huge backlash or rage against it, and I don't know. It's boggling to me.
Yeah, I really think the problem is just people playing Secrets Paladin. If everyone that played Secrets Paladin just stopped. I'm just kidding.
I am part of the problem. I totally agree with that. And I'm just going to wait till it blows over and I'm going to pick a new deck like Face Hunter or something.
There you go.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk about why we're happy real fast before we go too much farther. Mm-hmm. Matt, why don't you go ahead and go first?
I am happy because of the recent meta shakeup on the Hearthstone ladder between the Warsong and a nerf. So that just completely changes the battlefield or the playing field of the decks that are in use right now. And all the different classes and stuff, they're, you know, it's in flux right now. It's all being situated. And of course, there's BlizzCon in 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of interesting, right? Because I'm a big League of Legends fan as well.
Right.
And the one thing they did right before their World Championships, which is happening right now, is they put out a patch that totally changed the meta.
Exactly.
And it made it super interesting to watch. I can't wait for BlizzCon, right? Because you know someone figured out a new secret deck, quote-unquote secret, right?
Right.
And they're going to pull it out at BlizzCon. It's going to blow everyone's minds. It's going to be so exciting at the beginning.
Exactly. Like, it's the only way they can stand out and differentiate themselves from the opposition.
Yeah.
So... you know, and I've read about some of the negative feedback is why are they changing cards before a major tournament? Why do they, you know, I'm sure some players were in League of Legends were like, why do they nerf and buff all these heroes before Worlds or whatever? But I think it's nice. It adds a nice sense of unpredictability to the event.
Yeah, it does. And so, one thing I really like too is some pros in Hearthstone and basically any sort of esport and any sport really, pros are stronger in creative and strategy and like coming up with the decks, and some are stronger at executing. And I really like shaking up right before a tournament so that both of those strengths are really valuable right
now. You got to be able to pull off both.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. So the reason I'm happy is we got my son a Tigger costume for Halloween.
Tigger costume.
Yeah. It's super cute, right? And
a bouncing tiger. Does it have like a spring on the, or coil on the,
I certainly hope not. I have enough trouble just keeping track of him when he can run, but if he can bounce off
around,
things, he'll be like broken and destroyed within the hour. So, but he did hug it the entire time in the store that we got it. So that's how we knew we had to get it, because he was just hugging it so tight the whole time.
Aww.
Yeah. So that's been super fun. This is our first time dressing him up for Halloween. Because last year he was what? He was like 4 months old. It's,
right.
There's not much you could do. He was a potato.
Is he old enough to go trick-or-treating and all that? Or
so we're probably going to go trick-or-treating. He can walk. But he has he can't talk, and he has no concept of, like, go to that person's house and get candy. So we'll probably just go with my brother and his wife and stuff and walk around, and then we'll take all this candy. It'll be great.
Oh, you are doing a good parenting job of making sure he does not get excessive sugar.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yep.
See, my wife's family has this really interesting tradition that I think we're going to steal, where it's kind of like the Tooth Fairy, but it's for Halloween candy.
Oh, God.
Where they had a deal where my wife and her brother would leave all the candy they got for Halloween. Sorry, they got to choose 5 pieces to keep.
Okay.
And the rest of it they set outside their door before they went to bed. And when they woke up, I don't even know what they called it, we'll call it the Candy Fairy, had come and exchanged all the candy for a new toy. And this is brilliant, because they bought
a
$2 toy, and then their kids aren't eating candy for like the next 3 weeks entirely. And then the parents get a nice batch of candy. So.
Yeah, that's great. It's a good deal.
Yeah, so sorry to any kids listening that also have a candy fairy. I just destroyed
you. You just destroyed their dreams.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about that war song, Commander Nerf, that you were talking about before we get into everything else. Do you want to kind of give us the rundown of what happened? Because, I mean, it was pretty big.
Yeah, it was a massive, massive nerf. I'm just trying to remember the exact wording off the top of my head. There was no change to the mana cost. There was no change to Warsong Commander's health or attack, but it was all charge minions gain 1 attack.
Yeah.
That's what it changed into. And obviously the previous iteration was all your minions that have under 3 attack have charge.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah. Or sorry, 3 attack or less, but yeah.
At this point, the effect is kind of like Timberwolf, but super restrictive, because it's not even like, hey, your charge minions come in, they have
even
1
a raid
attack
leader or something
forever. Yeah. It's just like, nope. While this is here, your charge minions, which maybe you're running a couple and maybe have 1 on the board, have +1 attack.
Yeah, and it's what was it? Ben Brode, one of the lead. Like developer, Hearthstone card guy developer. I don't actually know what his formal title is. He just makes cards and stuff and does balancing and all that. He released a quick YouTube video and just kind of outlining the logic behind the changes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was due to what he called design space, where every time they design new minions, they would have had to keep Warsong Commander in mind, which can be a little restricting, right? So that was one aspect of it. And Warsong Commander is I believe it's a basic warrior card. So,
yeah, it is.
Yeah, so players would have access to it within a couple of levels of...
See, the basic, it might be common.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah so, I mean, it's similar to the Starving Buzzard, right? Nerf.
Oh my god, that one wrecked me too.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to bring up bad memories.
Starving Buzzard, Undertaker, Unleash the Hounds, like every single card that I really liked, that I enjoyed, nerfed to the ground.
Yeah. You
know, it's my fault. Blizzard nerfs every card I use.
Maybe the problem is you're using the blatantly OP cards. Maybe that's the problem, Matt.
Probably.
So, I mean, overall, people have been really happy about this change. There are some people who are upset because they were super into Grim Patron, but even a lot of my friends, and maybe this is similar to what you were kind of talking about earlier, Matt, my friends that were playing Grim Patron a lot didn't really like it, but they kind of felt like they had to play that deck,
yeah,
right? Because it was just so good.
And that's the problem at that during the height of its, I guess, dominance. It's every deck that wasn't Patron, your question when you were modifying your deck was, can this deck go 50-50 against Grim Patron? If not, if it loses more, I should not play this.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah, so I mean, this is nice. So. Actually, I think this is great. Clearly, they just wanted that card never to exist. So they just, like, deleted it entirely. It opens up...
It is the second time it got nerfed, though.
Oh.
Yeah, the first time... The original iteration of Warsong Commander was your minions have charge.
Oh, my gosh.
There was no attack restriction or whatever. So so what happened was... I remember this, like, yesterday, but when I'd be playing against Warriors, and I'd get them down to, like, 10 health or whatever... And boom, boom, Molten Giants. Boom, Warsong Commander. Boom, 16 damage to my face, and I'm dead.
Oh my gosh, that
sounds
horrible.
Yeah, that's why I got nerfed. Yeah.
Wow. I don't even remember that. That's brutal.
This was a while ago. They jumped on it pretty quick within the first week when people found out that particular card combination.
Interesting. So I mean, this opens interesting questions for cards like Hobgoblin, right? Which are kind of similar in when he was talking about it restricts the design space. If potentially that makes it too hard to release cards that have one attack or something like that in the future.
And they have to keep Hobgoblin in mind now. But thankfully, Hobgoblin is a card that's, although it's, you know, it's decent, it hasn't been overpowered at all in any way, shape, or form. So that's good.
Yeah, because I mean, a charge effect in general is just so universally powerful. You can put it on pretty much anything and they're happy.
Yeah, and more importantly, having a charge effect on the board means that your opponent cannot respond to it, and that's kind of what the crux was. That's why they nerfed Leroy, that's why they nerfed Gadget Zan Auctioneer, that's why they nerfed the Buzzard and Unleash the Hounds and all that stuff, was because your opponent did not have a chance to respond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I think we're both happy about this change. It's great. Have you seen what's the new decks that are popping up to rise in its prominence? Secrets Paladin came up, but I'm not sure if that was held back by Grim Patron. Yeah.
No, it wasn't really held back. It wasn't really new. It was a different kind of deck style, and it would always go. I think it was able to hold its own. It wasn't dominating against it, but it wasn't really losing against it either.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe Handlock is going to be going down a little bit. It's going to not have as much of a representation because Handlock traditionally did very well against Patron.
Yeah.
So anyone's game right now, really. Right? It's only been about a week since the change. So. Yeah. Everyone's just kind of jockeying for position and finding out. Hunters are coming back, though, obviously, without all those patrons keeping them in check. So I feel happy about that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. So are you? I assume you're going to be watching the tournament at BlizzCon. Do you have a favorite you're rooting for or anything like that?
The Canadian, the only lone Canadian on that tournament list.
Is that Purple or who is it?
No, that's, hang on, I have the name up somewhere. I feel bad because I forgot his name, but I saw the flag and I'm like, oh, we have a Canadian representative. I can't pronounce his name.
Wow, you're not a good Canadian fan, Matt.
I know.
I don't know his name. Can't pronounce it when you see it.
Hot Form. That's what it was.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry. Purple is Canadian. Oh, that's weird. I thought it was American.
Oh, so you got two Canadians?
I got two Canadians. What? Oh, I had no idea Purple was Canadian. What?
Better hope they don't face off against each other.
They're in different groups, so at least that part's okay. Yeah, Hot Form's in Group C, Purple's in Group D with Pin Ping Ho, and wow, that's a scary group.
Wow.
Purple, Ping Ping Ho, Nira, and Zihao from China. Good grief.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's going to be a rough one.
Very cool. So I'm super excited to watch this. I forget, Matt, are you going to BlizzCon?
Yep, I am going to be at BlizzCon this year for sure. I've been an avid BlizzCon attendee for the past, five, six BlizzCons.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been going just about every year as soon as I could.
Yeah, the Hearthstone tournament last year was actually my favorite event to attend. It was really mm-hmm. exciting. So I'm super excited for this year because I obviously at this point, I know more. I kind of know the pros a little better. I'm really excited to see watch it in person.
Yeah, having that extra, it means you can kind of follow along more. You have a better idea of how certain decks are going to be playing out and just a better understanding and appreciation for the game, which is always a good thing. Yeah.
And I heard, Matt, that there's a Hearthstone tavern that they've actually built up on the second floor.
Yeah. There's an actual... I don't remember where is it. Is it on the second floor?
Yeah, they said it was up on the second floor, but that's all I know about it.
And I believe, what did they say? That you could earn pins or packs or whatever it was. You can play miniature fireside tournaments against other attendees or answer trivia questions. I really want the fireside pin.
Yeah, me too.
I kind of want that. So I'm going to try to go for it this time.
Nice. Yeah, me too. We should team up.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. So I'm super excited. So for people that don't know, it's next weekend, right? Or wait, no.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks.
Yeah, next week.
It's on the Oh, it is next weekend.
Yeah. Wow. So the 6th and the 7th of Hearthstone, which is, or of November of Hearthstone.
Hearthstone.
As if it's a month.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So November 6th and 7th, the show is going to be there. It's going to be me and Nick, a new co-host, for those episodes. And we'll be covering all the news and all the tournaments going on there.
I'll see if I can podcast bomb you or something.
Yeah, dude. Hey. We'd be happy to. I know you're going to be crazy busy because you got BlizzWatch and all that sort of stuff going on.
I'll make time.
All right. Good man. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, you can come beat me up at the Hearthstone Tavern and then earn your free pin.
For sure. Be great.
Cool. All right, so let's talk about some sweet, sweet strategies, Matt.
Let's get down to it.
So we're doing, this is a strategy potluck episode. We did one of these probably like 3 months ago, I was trying to remember. This is where we take in a bunch of hosts and listeners who have both sent in their questions, advice, what they think are great tips, anything like that. And basically Matt and I are just going to go through them and then I'll share kind of what the people sent in. And then me and Matt will give our feedback on it, give our own takes on it. Cause some of it is like advice, new decks, and then just straight up questions about things that they like. So let's go ahead and just dive right in, Matt.
Lay it on me. What you got?
So let's go with this one first. This was sent in by Dan.
Hello, Dan.
He has an idea for a deck that he was wondering what we thought of. He's tried it a bit and it's been kind of hit or miss, but he actually thinks it's pretty consistent. So I want to know what he thought. He calls it the fake out deck.
Okay.
This is where he says 2/3 of his deck is a rush deck. So typically cheap mechs, although I've seen a couple people use Murlocs, he mentions. And then the other third are just huge dudes. So right. Ragnaros, Kel'Thuzad, Gruul, Ysera are the examples he gives. He says, so you can win with just aggro, right? So every now and then, because 2/3 of your deck is aggro, you just win through that. But the big fatties are there basically to be, if you don't win with aggro, suddenly the big guys start dropping.
Those are your finishers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Is that kind of too split? Or do you think it can work?
No, I think I've seen a couple of variations of this around. There was the Warlocks are actually really, really good at this. There's been the Demon Warlock deck, but that's been going around where they start off with your typical Zoo minions like your Haunted Creepers and your Knife Jugglers, and then they rely on either Sea Giants or Mal'Ganis to finish off their opponent. So this idea definitely has merit. And in a case like this, you've got to balance your deck between, as you said, cheap minions, finishers, and you probably are going to want a couple of spells on your own to help bolster your offense.
Okay, because so something like Bloodlust.
Bloodlust, yeah. Bloodlust is a great one, or Warsong Commander. No, don't actually do that, no.
Oh, too soon.
Too soon, yeah. But there is a vulnerability though here, though, in terms of the amount of minions that are played. And this is a vulnerability that can be found in many aggro-based decks, is that all it takes is like one Flame Strike or one Holy Nova, and then it's going to set you back a huge way. So if you want to go with a strategy, that's good, but you need to have a good understanding of what class you're playing against and know what their removal spells are. And more importantly, it's like poker. You got to know when to hold them instead of playing all of your minions on the board at the same time. Because that's probably not good, and you're going to be walking to a Flame Strike or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's what always makes me nervous about this sort of deck.
Yeah, it's exactly.
It feels like you have to really kind of understand your matchup as well. Because with aggro, it's very much like, okay, I want to go face. Like, you know, you have to play around what they're doing, but when it comes down to the choice, you want to go face.
Right.
In control, you always know when it comes down to it, you're like, okay, I want a board control. It's okay. But here it's like, man, you're going to have to make tough calls based on what you've drawn, what they've drawn, decide whether you want to go for the rush or try and stall it out. I mean, that probably makes it more exciting to play.
It's more exciting, and you have to know when to change gears. And this is why a deck like it's similar to Midrange Hunter, where you need to figure out, okay, do I want to pursue board control or do I just want to go all in here at this point and just get this game out of the way and secure the win?
Yeah.
Right. So it is definitely hit or miss in that sense. And you just kind of have to know when to adjust your game plan.
So is the difference with a mid-range deck just that mid-range doesn't have quite these huge of minions?
They have a smaller amount typically, but they do have some for sure. They don't have a super excessive amount because a lot of their minions are also, they trade really efficiently, or if they die, there's a benefit, such as your piloted treader.
Oh, yeah.
If it dies, you get a random two-cost minion like Millhouse Mana Storm, or you might get penalized with a Darnassus Aspirant and you lose a Mana Crystal. Or a Doomsayer. So,
man, I haven't actually had that happen with the Aspirant. That's awful.
Dude, it is just killer. It is probably one of the worst ones you can get aside from Doomsayer or something.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. All right, cool. So that's a really cool deck idea. I'll have to try that. So if someone was going to try and build this, or if I was going to try and build a mat, do you think start with an aggro deck and make some changes?
That's start with the aggro deck and build up. And by up, I mean build like top heavy in terms of like look for any finishers that would fit well with it. For example, Sea Giant.
Oh, yeah.
It gets cheaper the more minions you have, and if you're going to have a bunch of cheap minions, well, that means you can play it as early as turn 4 or turn 5.
Yeah.
And also you want to try to pair it with classes that either help you draw quicker or that help you get mana faster. So, for example, Druid is a good one because you can always ramp up quicker than you otherwise normally would, or a card or a class like a Warlocks where you can cycle through your deck a little bit faster to help replenish your hand.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. All right, Matt, you brought one of your own tips as well, or a discussion topic.
It was a discussion topic, but we can save that until after this bit on cards. It might be more of a focused issue, actually. I don't know how many of your listeners attend fireside tournaments or anything like that.
So we've had some that, because they've definitely written in and talked about their events. I'd actually really like to try and encourage people to do it more, because it's very... You have to go out of your way to find a fireside gathering, so it's very easy to kind of forget that they're there and just never go.
Right.
I live down in San Diego. There are a lot of them, and I just forget, to be honest. I'd love to just talk about it some more so people know about it and remember to check it out.
Yeah, it's a great thing, and a fireside is just where you go and meet up a bunch of other Hearthstone players in a coffee shop or a LAN center or... You know, some kind of community place where you can all just kind of hang out. Something with good wireless too, right? Where you can all connect and play Hearthstone at the same time. And
yeah, so how does that work exactly? Is it, because I know Blizzard has like an official list of some kind. You have to like get approved by them.
You don't even have to get approved. You just got to let them know, hey, Blizzard, I am running a fireside gathering, a tournament, or just a gathering in general at this location, at this date, at this time. Could you, could I get added to the Fireside Gatherings page and the events list? And that's it. And they'll get back to you within a day or a couple days. And sometimes they might even send you some Hearthstone pack codes that you can give away to people who show up.
Oh, very cool.
So every time I've applied, they've given me about 10 to 20 different codes, and I've just handed them out to participants, to people at random.
That's awesome. So how many people typically show up to the ones you do?
Oh, geez. I just held one yesterday. And that one, I had 30 people at that one. That was a full-fledged tournament, yeah. We raffled off a Razer headset and some lanyards and the Hearthstone pillow.
What? Wait, what? Where'd you get a Hearthstone pillow?
A pillow. Sorry, not a pillar. Pillar's different. Hearthstone pillow. That one was from the gear store, actually. I believe it was on sale not too long ago. And, yeah, so we managed to pick one up and just kind of put that up there as a raffle giveaway to players who showed up.
That's awesome. So you're doing this fairly regularly?
Yeah, usually once a month. I try to get something like this going just to get some players to come out and all that stuff. And, I live in Vancouver up here in Canada. It's not as populated as your LA or San Diego, so there's not that much action going on here. And I said, you know what? I want to get this thing going. I want to activate some Hearthstone players out here because there's no activity at all, and I may as well just try to initiate and start stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome, because all it really takes is one person to start.
It just takes one person, You got to publicize it a bit and then, go from there. Now, mine aren't just gatherings, though, right? It's not just people that are showing up and playing together. It's I've kind of leaned a bit more towards the competitive side, so now I've got Legend players showing up. We're doing Swiss-style tournaments, playoffs, the whole works.
Oh,
prize pools and everything, yeah. So we're getting a little bit more aggressive and competitive here.
That's awesome. So yeah. Are you competing in these too?
No, I technically can't. If I'm the tournament organizer, I don't think it's ethical for me to compete in my own tournaments.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as much as I want to, like, at the same time, I don't play as often as some of these players do. So I would feel a little bit intimidated. I could probably hold my own, but I wouldn't get that far, which is fine. And my goal is to hopefully send like local players here. Like I'm hoping. I keep telling them, the guys that show up here, hey, my job is to send you guys to BlizzCon next year. That's what I want to do. If I do that, then I'm happy, and then I can retire.
Yeah,
that's my goal.
You put a coach credit on your resume, and
you're
good.
Pretty much a coach. Yeah,
that's awesome. So how are you doing it? Because I know there are a lot of different ways to do tournaments. Are you doing it with like bring three decks, single elimination?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And There's a lot of different formats. You can do like Last Hero Standing, where it's you bring four classes and players can ban one of their opponents, and you keep playing the same class until you lose with it, until you have no heroes left.
Yeah.
But that is no longer the standard format. The standard format is Blizzard's Conquest mode, where you bring three classes and you have to win with all three in order to advance. The issue with that, though, is I find that it takes way too long. Matches between players can take up to like over an hour sometime.
Oh,
so
really?
We started our tournament yesterday at 11:30. That was round one. Finals. We didn't finish the finals until 9:30 that night. That's about 10 hours. It was like five rounds of Swiss, and then we cut to the top like 16. So we modified a little bit where we said during the group stage, it was you bring three classes, but you only have to win with any two of yours. So it was a best of three instead.
Okay.
Yeah, just to help shorten it a little bit. Yeah. And then once we got to the playoff round, it was okay, now we're going back to standard conquest. You got to win with all three classes in order to move on. And I tell you, the Control Warrior versus Control Warrior is by far the most boring and worst matchup ever. So many games where both players had like 28 health and 50-something odd armor.
Oh my gosh. And when it's already going like 10 hours long.
I know, and you're like, dude, the last thing you want is Control Warrior versus Control Warrior.
At that point, like, you just want Face Hunter versus Face Hunter. Like,
exactly.
Let's get this over
with. That's why I was so happy, you know, like... And Patron War was nice too, because at least those games ended pretty quick. But
do you think that's what we're in for at BlizzCon this year?
No, I think people are going to be playing the safe games. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of traditional decks that have done well in tournaments in the past, like your Druid, your Warlock.
Okay.
I don't know if Secrets Paladin will be making an appearance. I know it's very prominent on the ladder and all that stuff, but I believe that a lot of these pros that are very seasoned, they know how to completely dismantle the entire Secrets tree. So I don't think we're going to be seeing a lot of those. I could be, pleasantly wrong, though.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many people toss in cards specifically to counter that.
Exactly.
In case. Like, the threat of it being there could be really interesting.
Yeah, and the thing about these tournaments, though, is that you want to figure out, okay, what deck do I think my opponents will bring the most? And before, it would have been Patron Warrior. But that's not here anymore, right? So what lineup do you bring that will give you the best possible advantage, or like the most well-rounded advantage?
Yeah.
I don't know. Tough one.
So with your Fireside Gatherings, you've been pretty, obviously, I mean, getting 30 people seems awesome. Cause the one I went to, it was really early on, but there was like 10 people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so if someone listening to this kind of wanted to try and start their own Fireside Gathering, do you have any tips for starting up? I imagine like making it consistent is really good.
Yes. Consistent is the first thing. I think what you should start off with is just having a gathering. Don't even worry about the tournament part at all. Just have people show up and be like, hey, if you haven't gotten your, what's it called, the Fireside card back?
Oh, yeah.
Good way to do it. You know, just show up, connect to the wireless, play, I think, was it three games or something like that on the wireless?
Yeah.
On the same network, and you get your card back, right? And just keep building that community that way. Getting to commit regularly on a consistent basis. And then once you have a good number of people, you can start, talking to Blizzard and emailing them their Fireside Gatherings email address. Tell them, hey, I am running a Fireside Gathering and I've gotten, I'm expecting about 10 or so people. Could you put my event up on the Fireside Gathering page? And do you have any extra Hearthstone codes I can have to give away to my players?
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's one way to get started. And then, just get that going part first. After that, if you want to start escalating or upping your game, there's sites like Challenge or Battlefy. You can use those to run your own tournaments. You can do it single elimination or double elimination. They make it really, really simple to use. I prefer Battlefy myself. Shameless plug.
Okay, so that like helps you do the bracket?
Yeah, that helps you do the bracket. You just type in people's battle tags, and then you just type in seed, randomize, and boom, it just generates everything for you.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
So
you don't have to worry about tiebreakers or anything like that.
Have you run into people like trying to cheat at all?
Oh, yes. And by cheat, I mean they've mistakenly used the wrong deck quote unquote wrong deck.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So I've kept refining the rules every so often. Now most of my major tournaments, the ones that are either for cash or for WCS points, I have to really, really do it. I have to throw the book at everything. So that means if you register for my tournaments, you have to provide a full deck list of all your decks. on your deck selection screen, you can only have those three decks on your screen. So you can't have any like other fun decks laying around. No. I've had people who mistakenly pick the wrong deck and then just get a, hey, can I get a restart on my match? I picked the wrong deck after they knew what their opponent was already playing.
Oh.
So that's not cool. So I'm like, okay, no. You're picking, you're limiting to just three decks on the deck selection screen. That's it.
Yeah.
What else was there? I would also do random spot checks on decks. So I would go up to a player and be like, hey, show me your Druid deck or something like that. And just make sure all the cards are there. Make sure those cards are there. Yep. So I've had it happen where someone forgot to write a card in, or someone, you know, had the wrong card inserted, or, you know, they had a flare in when they didn't, although have a flare before. So, and in case like that, I would use my discretion. I would tell them, hey, you got to fix that, you know, change the card back to whatever it was before. Or if I was in a particularly bad mood, I would just hit them with a game loss and tell them, nope, you've lost that game. You still have to win out the rest of the way.
You've gone mad with power, Matt.
Yeah.
Mad with power.
There's a lot. At this point, there's like, if there's money on the line or if there's WCS points on the line, I can't afford to be too like lenient or whatever. And so, yeah.
For sure. I mean, and that's the way, I mean, that's the way it has to be. Yeah, especially with WCS points. I didn't know that you were doing that.
Oh, yeah. I'm. If you get a couple of tournaments under your belt, like Fireside Gatherings, and you tell Blizzard, hey, I want to run a tournament for WCS points, and you have the experience and you've demonstrated that, they would give you the ability to issue WCS points.
That's awesome. So just to remind people, WCS points are, I think it just stands for World Championship
World Championship Series points, and they go towards your overall, I guess, Hearthstone ranking for the year. And if you accumulate enough, you might be able to get into BlizzCon that way.
Yeah, so that's very cool. So all the pros that we're going to see playing at BlizzCon, they got that opportunity because they accumulated enough WCS points through events and stuff like that.
Yeah, or if they just kept ranking the top 100 every month. Yeah, those are the only major ways to obtain points.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Cool. So any other thoughts on Fireside Gatherings?
Oh, disconnects. That's a big problem.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a problem. If you're playing in a competitive environment and you disconnect, yeah, those are not fun.
Yeah, what do you do about that?
Usually I'm like, I tell the opponent, hey, can you rope?
Like, oh, yeah.
Just rope as long as you can and give them an opportunity to reconnect. And usually within 90% of the time, they'll be able to reconnect.
Okay.
If it's, you know, if it doesn't happen or if it crashes out or whatever, I have to look at the game state. If it's turn one or turn two, you know, reset the match, guys. If it's turn 10 and it's clear the guy had lethal, there was no way you were coming back. I have to give him the win. So it's little arbitrary decisions like that. And thankfully, I haven't had to do that yet. Most games have reconnected, or there were early crashes before it even got to the, you know, turn three or whatever.
Yeah.
So I've been fortunate so far.
That's good. Yeah, because, I mean, even when you win, that's not the way you want to win.
You don't want to win that way, no. And I've had an opponent generously go, I'm just going to do nothing. I'm going to pass my turn. And I'll do nothing and try to buy as much time as I can from 3Connect. So that was good sportsmanship.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Gave him a pack for that.
Nice. Oh, what? Dude.
I know, right?
You're a kind judge.
I am a kind judge.
Very cool. So let's jump to the next topic.
For sure.
Jamie, who was on the show a few episodes ago, I think he brought on the Grim Patron deck. He had a topic, save the best for last.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying it's somewhat counterintuitive to think that you should play a lesser 4-drop before your awesome 4-drop on an empty board. So if you're on turn 4 and you've got a Chillwind Yeti and, I don't know, what's a super awesome 4-drop?
Oh, Power Treader?
Okay, Pilot of Treader. There you go.
Treader, yeah. It's the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. And Jamie is saying that you should play the worse one first. So in... This is not a great example because they're both
pretty awesome cards. But I see what you mean, though.
I think so. If you had like Sylvanas and a Magma Rager, Magma Rager isn't
very extreme. Very extreme
but
example.
You want to play the Magma Rager first, even though you're excited to get Sylvanas on the board, right?
Right.
Because the idea is most classes have a ton of removal. Right. Hearthstone is just a really removal heavy card game. There's tons of removal.
Exactly.
And so you want to play the cards that you know are going to get killed first, so that the Magma Rager goes out there and goes, woo, I'm going to punch you in the face, and they get, you know, frostbolted or whatever.
You're forcing them. You're trying to force them to react to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that by the time you play your Sylvanas, they don't have any removal, or the only removal they have left is their premium removal, so they're having to throw whatever they got left at it.
Exactly, like a Shadow or Death or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a very quite a valid approach for,
yeah, I think, for
these situations. Yeah, you definitely want to do what they call bait out the removal.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really good tip too, because one of the mistakes kind of I made early on, I think a lot of people make early on, is you just get excited when you draw that card that's really strong.
Oh, Dr. Boom, let's play it.
Yeah, exactly.
Knowing they have an execute in their hand or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's happened to me too. I've fallen into that trap.
Yeah. It's so easy because you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to dominate the board with this card. And then it's just like, oh, they haven't played any removal this game. They have three different spells sitting in their hand waiting for you to play that card.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, this changes, though, if you're playing a deck where almost every card in your deck is a threat. For example, Control Warrior.
Yeah.
You got your Ysera, your Grom Hellscream, your Dr. Boom, your Emperor T. Like, every card, almost every card they play is a threat. Like, oh, gosh, you're going to run out of removal before you go at it, right? So, but that's a very rare example.
And that's a good problem to have. And at that point, it's just like, man, I don't have any bad cards to bait out
Doesn't
removal.
Doesn't matter. You play all of them. What are you going to do about it, right? Because eventually one of them is going to get through.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I mean, alongside that, it's interesting to sometimes play cards intentionally to bait out removal. I don't have a great example, but if you were trying to bait out an AoE spell, you might drop down, put down two minions and see if they do it right, where it would still be advantageous for them. They'll probably use it if they have it because they need to. And if not, then you're like, all right, let's go muster for battle next turn. I don't think they have their AoE in hand. We're good.
Yeah. And even if they do, well, you only lost one card, three minions or whatever, but still, it was a one card investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's great.
Very cool. All right. Yep. Next one from Zoran.
Zoran.
When a one drop is not a one drop.
When it's a two drop.
When it's a two drop. When it costs two mana. Or when you have coin. So Zoran wrote in, he was teaching his wife how to play priest. Here you go, Matt. Fighting words. This is a quote from him, so don't get mad at me. Having recently converted her from dastardly face hunter. So he says, I learned the hard way that if you drop Northshire Cleric on turn one, usually people will play around it and you don't get any value out of it. So when my wife needed to run priest for her dailies, I explained to her that even though it's a one drop, you usually want to hold on to it in later in the game to get better value. So first off, I think we agree with this, right, Matt?
That's a huge it depends question. But yeah, for the most part, yes.
Yeah, like there are at least situations where a one drop is not a one drop. And there are definitely particular cards that are more suited towards that sort of thing. I think it's usually cards that either buff other cards or require a specific
effect
combo
or whatever. For example, Knife Juggler.
Yeah.
You don't want to play it naked on its own. You want to play it with at least one other minion to get that knife thrown.
Yeah.
But as for the Northshire Cleric example, you know, I find I usually like playing it on turn one. In most cases, they can't react to it. And if they do react to it, well, goes back to the previous example of they just lost one of their removal spells to remove a Northshire Cleric.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that because he mentions people will usually play around it.
Yeah.
A lot of times I like that.
Which is fine. Exactly.
Because I put it down on turn one. Suddenly they can't play their Leper Gnome, right?
They can't play the Leper Gnome. They can't play their Annoyatron or their Shielded Minibot or whatever. There's been times where my opponent played a Cleric and I'm like, well, that there goes half my hand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like,
and you end up passing your turn.
I pass my turn or have the hero power or whatever, and I lose tempo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will say, though, if you never want to be dropping Northshire Cleric if there's already something on the board that can just beat it, right?
Yeah, you probably don't want to do that. You want to play it if there's nothing on the board and you're the one being the aggressor.
Yeah, so if there's something like a Bloodfin Raptor on the board or something like that, that's the sort of case where it's like, all right, hold on to Northshire Cleric, wait until you can combo it with a heal right away.
Exactly, like sit on it for sure.
Yeah, because I mean, that's the thing. I mean, maybe the better way to look at this is not that these are one drops that can't be played on turn one, but that these are one drops that have value throughout the entire game.
For sure.
So it's actually more of an upside of, I don't have to play this right now. I can save Northshire Cleric till turn 8, and he's still going to be super valuable.
Exactly. I mean, this is in contrast to something like a Zombie Chat, which is great turn 1, but not something you want to see on turn 8.
Yeah. So he asked, what are some other one or two drops? Here's a few that I looked up, like Timberwolf, Scavenging Hyena, Abusive Sergeant.
Yep.
All those kind of...
I agree with every single one of those.
Yeah, Swarm decks. I think Shrinkmeister is another one, because that usually wants to combo with the Cabal Priest, I think.
Yep.
The one that
you
steals.
Want to mind control something. Yep. You don't ever want to use that right away unless... Yeah.
And then this is another one. I don't know how you feel about this, Matt. Argent Protector. So this is the 2/2 that gives something Divine Shield. I usually like to keep that for late game just because it feels like the Divine Shield, you get so much more value out of it when you're throwing it on a 6/8 or whatever.
Exactly, on a larger minion. But yeah, there are times where you want to play it early on. But for the most part, you want to save it. Save it.
All right, cool. So there you go. Good work, Zoran. Sharing good knowledge with your wife. Converting her from dastardly...
Probably a good thing. Probably a good thing. What's next here?
We got Mildex.
Ooh, Mildex.
From Max. So this is a question from Matt. He asked what we thought about Mildex. Basically, he tried playing it, but he just couldn't find a way to make it work perfectly. Like, he tried using Lorewalker Cho to fill an enemy's hand, or with rogues, but it is just too situational. He thought maybe Clockwork Giant, which at the time was pretty new when he sent in this question, might be good enough to do it. What do you think?
Mildex in general aren't generally competitive, but I've had a couple of players take games off of me about playing Mildex, much to my surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's certainly possible, and I believe the rogue class is the best one for that because of their ability to return cards back to their hands or duplicate a bunch of minions and, return all those back to their opponent's hands. So little things like that.
Yeah.
And
The few times that I've lost to Mildex is when the Vanish, instead of putting it all to your hand, just deletes them all because your hand is full.
Exactly.
And it's like,
wow,
you just paid 6 mana to kill 5 minions. That's incredible.
That's pretty good, yeah. Or all the Cold Light Oracles and bounce it back here, play it again, so on and so forth. So, definitely.
Yeah. I've seen Druid Mill do decent as well because it has cheap removal, but the downside to all those cards is always your opponent draws cards or puts cards in hand, which when you're playing Mill is kind of what you want anyways.
Yeah.
I doubt that Mill is ever really going to be a real strategy because, it's super annoying to play against. It's not something the devs want in the game, at the pro
like
tier.
Yeah, exactly. It's an alternative win condition, which is good, but generally speaking, probably not a competitive one.
Yeah. Although I will say, there are some tavern brawls that are super suited for Mill decks. And that's where I think is the most fun to play around with that, when there are specific abilities or rules that really make it good. Cool. All right, our last one for today. This is mine. Whoa, I was like, wait, I've heard of this before. So one of the questions which we're going to talk about right after this I got in was asking about RNG cards and kind of how to know what percentage the options were for something like Implosion. I think it's really good just to test card RNG. It doesn't really take as much time as you'd think. If you're curious at all about cards and wanting to make the best decisions when you're playing, knowing exactly how the percentages work behind the scenes is super valuable.
Yeah, exactly. And these are like little formulas, little math things, or just knowing how certain the order of operations of certain cards.
Yeah.
It'll help you out a lot.
So here I came up with a quick list of just recommended tips for testing card RNG that helped me today as I refined my deck. Mm-hmm. So it took me about 2.5 hours to get 100 tests of Implosion. That's the warlock spell that deals 2-4 damage, summons that many imps.
Yeah.
I'm pretty happy with 100 tests, right? Because obviously the more data you get, the
but
better. 100, but
I think 100's a good number.
Yeah, 100's good. And I definitely saw a lot of fluctuation in between, but by the time I got to 100, it kind of evened out.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like, okay, I think it's fairly reliable. So here's the things you want in your deck, right? So I ran Warlock, because obviously getting that card draw is awesome.
Yep.
Putting in card draw cards like the Gnomish Inventor, the Acolyte of Pain was really good. But what was interesting is you can actually have too much card draw.
Yes, you can. You can have too many cards in your hand, which is not always the best thing.
I eventually ran to the point where it's like, if I play any of these minions, I'm gonna fill my hand, and I'm already burning cards. So I was trying to grind to Implosion, but accidentally started burning it up because my hand was full.
Whoops.
I was like, oh, I just wasted 5 minutes. Okay. So I found out like about 1/3 of my cards were related to card draw, and that was about enough. Cro-Magus was super useful. Especially when I was trying to test, like, or use legendaries and stuff like that to test, because suddenly I had four implosions in my hand instead of two. And tossing down Lorewalker Cho.
Yep.
Was super useful, and then tossing Faceless Manipulator to get more Lorewalker Chos. Jeez. It was just so good because at one point I had, five implosions in my hand, and I think I had like eight in their hand. Because you can basically control the AI. If you fill their hand with implosions and put minions on the board, all they're going to do is cast it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and then Lorewalker Cho creates three copies anytime one is cast until everyone's hand is just, implosions. It's super useful for testing. So I definitely recommended that. Gnomish Inventor was actually a smaller one that was very useful. Because I was fishing for spells, and Gnomish Inventor draws cards, but the downside is if it's not a spell, it nukes it, basically.
Right.
But I just care about spells, so that worked out great. Just keep fishing through. The other thing is, make sure you don't put spell power in.
No, if you don't, it's gonna mess with your results.
Yeah, because one of the first cards I put in was the Azure Drake. Because I was like, oh yeah, awesome bodies, big card draw. And then as soon as I put it on the board, I was like, oh, I'm gonna cast Implosion. I was like, oh.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, and when you're testing 100 of them, I just removed it from my deck because I'm gonna mess up one of those times if I even have it on my deck at all.
And it's gonna spoil the results, yeah.
Yeah, which is no good. And then also, Taunt and Heals were super useful. This is like the best use ever of just like Senjin Shieldmaster and Fen Creeper, where it's like, just put fatties out there because they're just going to make sure that whatever you need, which is like Lorewalker Cho and that sort of stuff behind the lines, was just staying safe. And then last tip, play against Priest AI, the easy one, because they do so much healing. The only removal that they run at all, they don't run Holy Nova. All they run is Shadowward Pain. What's the three cost one or the three?
Shadowward Pain. Yeah.
Yeah. So they run one copy of that and that's it. So they pretty much just let you do whatever you want.
Yeah. And they keep healing themselves over and over again.
Yeah. Which is great. So yeah. Perfect. I could never lose. So that was it was actually really fun. I wasn't sure if I really wanted to test it, but once I started going, it was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's jump into the question because it totally relates to this. Fritzel asked, are RNG cards like Implosion balanced 25, 25, 25% or whatever? Or is 2 imps weighted more than 4 imps? Matt, do you know, I looked, but I couldn't really find any official word from Blizzard on this.
No, I mean, I'm sure someone out there has actually done all the iterations and all that stuff, but it statistically speaking, it should be roughly the same within, 2, 3, 4 damage. That's about 33-ish%, roughly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, because if I was recommending someone who's super interested in Hearthstone and trying to plan out their decks perfectly, I would never assume that it's even percentages. Because I know in other card games, in Hex, which is another card game I play, it's definitely not.
Right.
And on some cards, they actually list what the percentages are, but others, they don't. So you definitely want to do your own tests. There's been a lot of community testing. If you search for it, you'll find stuff on the forums. Whether you want to trust those people or not is another thing. But like, for example, Animal Companion, the hunter one that creates a pet, it seems roughly equal. What, maybe Misha, the 4-4.
I can tell you from personal experience that the pet that you don't want is the one that's going to appear.
Exactly. But see, that's the thing. But then when your opponent plays it, it's always the pet
it's tougher or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just to kind of give an example, so I did these 100 tests on Implosion. And I mentioned a couple episodes ago that I thought Implosion had actually been stealth nerfed. Because my first 25, 56% of them were 2 imps.
Nice.
And then 20 and then 24, which really stood out as an oddity to me. But then by the time I got up to 100, it had evened out almost perfectly. It was 35% on 2, 33, then 32, right?
Exactly. That was just standard deviation.
And so it was interesting, though, because on the forums, people only complain when they're really happy or really sad. For the most part, on forums, they only post. So all the people posting on there were saying either, oh, I got a string of 4s, or I got a string of 2s.
The
one thing I did notice, and this again is only out of 100, the RNG was super streaky.
Yeah.
Like the first 25, super heavy on 2s. The next one, super heavy on 4s. Then super heavy on 3s. Then the last one was kind of even. But it's interesting that like, when you look at the numbers, it actually is super heavy. And I think that's what causes people to think that it's unfair because they play
exactly
they play it 10 times and are suddenly like, oh no, it's broken. But no, it was just streaky.
No, it's exactly. Yeah. It totally is streaky. Not always consistent.
Yeah. So I'm curious, Matt, what has there been any RNG cards that you just won't play because it seems like you have really bad luck with them or anything like that?
Shamans.
Totem power?
Yeah, the totem power. No, yeah.
Yeah.
I love shaman, but between that and the overpower, but that's a different topic for a different day.
Yeah, the totem power is frustrating. Mm-hmm. The one to me was always this may make me a bad person, Adam or Matt.
Yeah.
The knife juggler. I still play it, but man, it never goes where I want.
I hear you.
You sometimes pray as much as you want, and it's like, nope. I'm going to avoid the four people with one health and just poke the 6-7.
Or hit the player or whatever.
Yeah.
makes me sad.
Yeah. All right. So that is our strategy potluck. Matt,
mm-hmm.
any other parting tips to throw into our smorgasbord?
No, that's quite a lot already. I don't want to overwhelm the listeners today.
That's true. All right. Sure. Don't want to give them too much wisdom.
Yeah, I got to maintain my edge here.
How else are you going to win the BlizzCon?
Exactly.
All right. So some of our community stuff. No iTunes reviews this week. We did have a new donation come in, which was awesome. Chris Flores chipped in for $2 a month. But Chris, you didn't send a message, buddy. So send me an email so I can read a message out, or if you don't want to say anything, that's fine too. But I'd like to at least be able to thank you, because I can't send a message back through PayPal, so drop me a line so I can say thanks. We did do the Dust Bowl before this show. Super excited. Jake Crawford, who donates every month, he actually donated 7 packs, but I got confused and did 10 packs instead. So Jake, you did 10 packs this month. And we got some really cool cards, including a legendary, which is super exciting. The live stream of opening those packs is going to be in the show notes, gamediplomat.com. But as always, Matt and I are going to pick one card to save each and one to dust each. So I got to go with the legendary, Matt. I know it's not the best legendary. It's Dreadscale, which is an awesome 3-cost, 4-2, hunter legendary.
Yep.
With the effect, it's at the start of your every turn, at the start of your next turn.
At the end of your turn.
At the end of your turn, deal 1 damage to all other minions.
Yeah.
Which is fun. Like, I'm excited to try it. I mean, it's
good. Good anti-secrets deck. Anti-secrets.
So, all right. So what card are you going to keep out of the batch, Matt?
I saw the video, and like, I have to keep the Golden Druid of the Saber just because it's gold.
Yeah. And that card, I mean, the card actually seems pretty promising.
It's pretty good, yeah. I see a lot of aggro Druid decks use it.
Yeah, because that is, what are the stats on that? 2-cost?
2-1. It could be a 2-1 with charge or 2-1 with stealth, I think is what it was.
Or it's a 3-2 with stealth.
3-2 with stealth, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting. Actually, even though we only opened 10 packs, we got a lot of cards for Beast Druid.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I might go try and do that. So when you say aggro Druid, is that Beast Druid or are those two separate things?
It's a different kind of style.
Okay.
Yeah. Aggro Druid has like combo, like your standard combo, and it's got like Leper Gnomes and Savage Combatants in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff.
Okay, cool. I'll have to try that out.
And the card to dust. You picked...
I picked Flash Heal.
Flash Heal, okay. Yeah.
So that's the 1-cost, restore 5 health. I'm just not big on this card.
That's fair. That's fair.
There's so many ways for Priest to heal that do other things really too that you really don't need. I don't need a 1-mana cost card. It
doesn't help you win.
Yeah. I'm not feeling it.
I had to go the opposite direction. I picked Dreadscale.
What? It's a legendary.
I know, but wow. You could use the dust.
That is actually very true. I need dust badly. So, all right. So that would get me actually, I guess, an epic, right? Yep. If I dusted that?
Give or take.
Okay. All right. So.
Oh, we got to wrap it up pretty soon. I just got the call.
Okay. All right. Let's do it fast. Oh, good thing you're here. Because it's time to sing the Card of the Week song.
Oh, God.
That's right.
I'm not prepped for the Card of the Week song. What's the Card of the Week song?
Oh, Matt! Oh, come on,
buddy. Sorry.
Okay. For a Card of the Week section, the guest host sings the intro. And it can be anything you want. It just has to include the words Card of the Week in it. But you can do any tune, anything you want, as short as you want.
Oh, man.
Surprise, dude. I'm sorry. I thought I told you ahead of time.
I didn't know. Can I rain check this one for the future? Show instead?
There's no way. I've never let anyone rain check it. I'm sorry.
I don't know how.
Just pick your favorite song, sing that, and then add Card of the Week at the end. Can't be Happy Birthday.
Oh, man. Dude, you're putting me on the spot. I don't know what to do.
Do a Christmas song. Because it's almost Christmas, and it's my favorite time of year. Jingle bells. There you go.
Doesn't even work.
Sure does. Jingle bells, jingle bells. Card of the week.
Shake it off. Shake it off. Card of the week. I don't know. Best I can do.
All right, Matt. We're going to sing this together.
Okay.
We're going to sing, let's see. What's a better Christmas song? What's the best Christmas song, Matt, in your opinion?
Oh, card of the week.
Oh, card of the week. Perfect.
You know, all right. Oh, holy night or whatever, but yeah.
All right. We'll call that a duet, and we'll put you through. All right, so the card of the week this week is Shadow Fiend. It's a 3-cost, 3/3, priest epic, creepy-looking parasite dude. Whenever you draw a card, reduce its cost by 1.
Like a lesser version of Emperor T.
Yeah, which... It's interesting. I mean, you've mentioned you've tried to make this card work.
I tried.
What do you think?
But I couldn't do it.
Really?
Couldn't do it.
So what's the problem with it?
It's too slow.
Yeah.
Right?
Just the
people... it dies. It's not durable enough.
Yeah. So is the problem that you have to wait until your next turn, right? Because Emperor Thrasian, yeah. You play him, he's going to do something.
Boom, done. Yeah, all your cards in your hand reduce. Yeah. But you have to wait till your next draw with the Shadow Fiend.
Yeah.
So if this was a 3/4, I think if it was a 3/4 with one more health, it would make a big difference.
Yeah. So if you were going to try and play this card, is this similar to Northshire Clerk or that question earlier where it's like, you should probably play this later when you can combo with card draw? No?
You want to play this as early as you can because either if they leave it on the board, your cards get cheaper. If they don't leave it on the board, they just burn a removal on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's going to do it for the show for us. As always, we're going to have full show notes along with links to videos, trailers, information, all that stuff, GameDiplomat.com. As always, we want to know what you thought. And hear what you want to have in future episodes. You can find us on Google+, on Twitter, I'm @JAugustine, or you can email me, I'm ajosh@outlook.com, or just comment on the blog directly, gamediplomat.com. Matt, where can people find you?
You can find my weekly Hearthstone column at blizzardwatch.com, usually just after the weekend, so like Sunday or Monday. On Twitter, you can find me at Matticus. And for Warcraft players, if you're out there still, worldofmatticus.com is my Warcraft blog.
Yeah, and I highly recommend checking out Matt's stuff. He's been writing about Blizzard games forever.
Yeah,
yeah, and all the stuff is super top-notch. His Hearthstone columns are super good. I love them. So, Matt, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Josh.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So, reminder, next episode, we're going to be at BlizzCon. So we'll have videos and all that sort of stuff. Hopefully, maybe even Matt will stop by and say hi. That'll be great.
For sure. I'll try it.
Yeah. So, thanks again for everyone listening, for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.
See ya.